Yeah, that might be good actually. Yeah. What we're trying to do here is we're going to talk about management, managing ourselves, really. So I talked about time management in the title, I think, but it's also, this is also personal management. So I've heard someone say you can't actually manage time. Time is outside our control, but you can manage yourself and how you work within the limits of time, which I think is right. Now, leadership and management go together, and so it's hard to talk about management, personal management, without talking about personal leadership. Management is doing things right. Leadership is doing the right things. As Drucker, management is doing things right. So you've got a task to do. Managing something is thinking about the best way to do it, the most efficient way to do it. Whereas leadership is about doing the right things. Where are we going? What are the things we need to achieve? So you need those things working in parallel. You need to work out what we want to achieve and then the best way to achieve those things. So you need good leadership and good management. In personal life, you need them within the one person generally. In other spheres, you can be a good leader and have good managers alongside you, or be a good manager and have good leaders alongside you, which is why team ministry functions so well. So another way of saying it is efficiency is management, effectiveness is leadership. You don't want to be too hard and fast, but I think it's quite helpful. Management is efficiency, leadership is effectiveness. Effectiveness is you actually achieve the things you need to achieve. Management efficiency is you achieve those things with the least resource in the best amount of time in the most efficient way possible. So another way, leader decides the things that are first. Management puts the first things first day by day. Leadership decides what the first things are, the key things are. Management day by day puts those things first and makes sure they're achieved. I'm just saying the same thing in all sorts of different ways. Now, I think this is an area that we're all learning in and actually all need to become better at, because when you start to talk about personal management, it's of your whole life. It's not just something you do for ministry, but it's something you do for everywhere. I'll have a few hints and tips of things that I do, but they're just things that I find helpful. And you might think, man, I'm not doing that. That sounds dumb. I've got better ways of doing that. And you might want to share those so we can learn from each other's ways of doing things. Management or time management is really organizing and executing around priorities. That's effectively what it is. So what are the priorities? How are you going to organize and carry out those things to make them happen? Or as Jocko Willink would say, prioritize and execute. It's good. Prioritize and execute, which is really lead and manage. Set your priorities, carry them out. Now, leadership is required through all that process, but anyway. Now, how do you do that then? How do you manage your time well in order to get the things that need to be done done? Well, firstly, you've got to make sure you set the things that you want done. But there's been a whole bunch of generations of time management theory over time, and all of them contribute helpful stuff. So notes and to-do lists was one generation of time management theory, which is very helpful. I don't use notes that much, but I use to-do lists, and I think they're absolutely crucial, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Calendars and schedules. So it becomes increasingly apparent to me that, now I sound like an old man, trying to get old, but the younger generation doesn't use calendars. It just freaks me out. How do you possibly plan uni and work and ministry commitments if you don't have a calendar? So some sort of calendar, even if it's on your phone, some sort of calendar that you really work with and work on is very important, I think. And scheduling can be helpful. So you break down the tasks into smaller components and you schedule how you're going to achieve those tasks over a period of time. All that sort of stuff's helpful. We'll come back to that. Another generation of time management was about goal setting, planning, and daily planning, daily management. Set your big goals, plan out how you're going to get to that goal, and then manage your time daily. And that even got down to 15 increments at one period of time, which can be a good way to evaluate how you spend your day, is just break up into 15-minute increments and write down every 15 minutes what you did in that 15 minutes. You wouldn't want to do that for too long, it'd drive you insane. But as a tool to work out how you spend the majority of your time, it's quite a helpful tool. But there were some businesses who took time management to that degree, which you wrote down everything you did, which is really micromanaging from above and is a very painful way to live your life. But some helpful things came out of that. But crucial to good time management is what's actually, we've talked about, is managing yourself. So it's a focus on preserving and enhancing results and relationships. What are the things we want to achieve? Where is it we want to go? And one of the questions that I think is really helpful for us to ask ourselves, but it's also really helpful in pastoral conversations with people, is where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where would you like to be in 5 years? And you can use it in people's relationship with God. You know, when something's going a bit haywire and you think, yeah, they're not moving in directions that I perceive are helpful, one of the things you can do is as you sit with them and chat with them, one good question is, where do you see yourself in your Christian life in 5 years? Because straight away, you're actually going, do you want to mature? Do you want to grow? Do you want to move forward, even if you didn't ask that question? But secondly, you actually start to get them thinking and planning towards that. And that then enables you to come in and say, do you think what you're currently doing in terms of your church attendance, if that's the issue, your church attendance is helping you on that track? Or, do you know what I mean? So you've opened them up for where they want to go to, and then you coming alongside to help them move in that direction, which is far less confronting than, you haven't been to church lately, have you? Yeah, that sort of thing. But that's a really helpful thing for me, for us, personally. Set it long-term first. I think, at the end of my life, what do I want to look back at my life and think, under God, that's what, I'm happy. Under God, I'm glad the Lord used me in that way. Under God, I'm glad my life went in those directions. Now, God's in control, and often it goes in directions we could not fathom. So, but generally, how, if I was to live a faithful, godly life, where do I want it to end? And then you start to reverse engineer the process. Do I want to go? How am I going to get there? What are the steps? What's the track? What's the trajectory? What things I'm going to do? And then it's often better to set shorter term goals. So the 5 year, where do I want to be in 5 years? In my Christian life, in my working life, in my family life, in my, and hopefully all those things are quite integrated rather than thinking about them as separate channels. And as soon as you start to do that, you actually have results. You know what I mean? You've looked ahead, things I want to get to, they're the results I want to achieve, and they're the relationships I want to have. That's how I want to invest my time, in building those results, in building those relationships. Is this making sense so far? Okay. Now I come to this. And who's seen this before? Something like this before? Yeah, good. I just think this is, every time I do it, I come away with a fresh, wow, that's so helpful. That's just so helpful. And it's very, very, very simple. So you can basically divide up your entire life. Hey, too noisy. Divide up your entire life into those four quadrants. And it's divided by the urgent, the not urgent, and the important, and the not important. And we spend all of our life somewhere in there. And it's hard to totally remove yourself from any one of the quadrants. But the big thing is, where do we want to sit? Where do you think we want to sit on that? Yeah. We've got to do the important. So straight away you think, if it's not important, why am I doing it? Like, why am I spending time? Because it's not achieving the results and the relationships that I want to achieve. And so why am I actually doing it? Is it because, what are you doing? Is it because of, I don't know, default settings, family background, things in my personality and character? I don't know. I think they're just taping it.
It's just too loud.
Okay. Is on?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, so there may actually be reasons we do stuff in there, but usually they're unhelpful reasons, and we want to move ourselves out of those categories. The important we do have to do, but as has been suggested, as you move yourself into this quadrant, quadrant two, you actually minimise what's going on in quadrant one. So think about your life. Now, I've got examples up there, and they're often examples from the work sphere because I've taken it directly from work literature. But I think it illustrates it really well. So think about your whole life and think about where you sort of fit. Now, lots of our lives exist in here, which is good because it's important. It's stuff that actually really does need to get done. But we run from one crisis to another. So this goes wrong, you have to go and fix that. This goes wrong, you have to fix that. This goes wrong, you have to fix that. And you have to fix them because they're actually really important things in your work or your family or your ministry. So you keep running to fix. Pressing problems is a bit like crises, I guess. Deadline-driven projects. So there's always the next uni assignment due. There's always the next ministry thing that you've got to go to, or study you've got to write, or meeting you've got to prepare for, or whatever it might be. But they just keep rolling one on another. And so when you live in that sphere, urgent, important, too heavily, you start to get really stressed, you know, burnout. You run from crisis to crisis. I think I've stressed there twice because it's so stressful. You know? But can anyone resonate with that? I reckon lots of us live in that sort of category. Just running from thing to thing, important things, but never actually getting on top of it. Now, the only way to get out of that is actually to move into this category. But the only way to move into this category is to actually firstly steal from these and then slowly siphon off this one. You've got no extra time, so you've got to steal it from one of the other quadrants, if you know what I mean. So the first thing you do is you have to steal from these two quadrants. I'll talk through this one first, though. Now, what are you doing in the not urgent but important one? Now, this is the one that if you didn't do it today, or you didn't do it next week, or you didn't do it in the next month, no one would ever know, and there's no deadline, so it wouldn't, you know, people wouldn't be ringing you, you wouldn't be feeling like you dropped anything, you wouldn't be, but if you don't do it, you'll never get out of that other one. What it is it's not crisis, but it's prevention. So you look at the crises in your life and you go, what's causing those crises? How do I limit those crises? How do I head off those crises? How do I minimise it? How do I set up a system that actually doesn't, well, I mean, there were no crises. Now, you can never eliminate crises entirely. But how does it get to a point where it is almost totally, there's never a point where there's a crisis, because I've looked at all the possible problems that could come up in my business or my ministry or my, I've planned ahead for them and I've worked out a way to stop that happening. Now, the only way you'll ever do that is you actually have time and you sit down and you reflect and you work out how am I going to do that, which is not urgent, but vitally, vitally important. I'll give you one example from my world. Growth groups. So in the maturity world, we're trying to get more leaders all the time, all the time, all the time, all the time. It never, ever stops. We've got a lot of groups, and it never stops, which is great because it means church is growing, the gospel is moving forward. And so you've always got to be leadership expansion, leadership succession. More groups, so I need more leaders. Succession, leaders will drop out, I need to replace those leaders. So I need to have a way to keep doing that. If you don't have a way to do it, you'd run from crisis to crisis. We need a new group, we need a new group. Where are we going to get the leader? How are we going to... And you live like that. And after a while, I can't live like that. And so I realised there's got to be a better way to do this. And so you create a system of leaders in training in groups, moving towards having a leader in training in every group, good training resources and material to help the leaders train those. It takes a long time, a lot of effort, a lot of energy, a lot of work to set that up. It actually takes years to move towards from having two or three leaders in training to groups to having 30 to having 50. You know, it actually, but there's almost never a crisis in that regard now. Because we've been intentional, we've stepped ahead of the problem, we've headed it off, and now it flows out. Now, it's always tight, it's always difficult, but the crises come very much more rarely. Does that illustrate that a little bit? Product I think it's probably actually production building, should say. Have you guys heard of the goose that laid the golden egg? Like a little fable. Probably won't tell it right, but there's a goose and it lays golden eggs. And the farmer is stoked because he gets these golden eggs and he can spend them and do stuff with them. But one day he gets greedy and so he thinks, I wonder if I opened up the goose, whether there'd be heaps and heaps of gold in the goose. And so he kills the goose and there's no more golden eggs. And the moral of the story is, don't kill the goose that's laying the golden eggs. So you have in your life production and production capacity. The production is the product. You know, like it's the thing you're producing. It's the golden eggs. The production capacity is the thing that's producing the golden eggs. So in a workplace or in personal life, there's always a producer and a produced. And we've got to make sure that we're not just focusing on the produce, the golden eggs, but we're actually paying attention to the goose. In some contexts, the goose is us. You know, we're the thing that's producing the golden eggs, so we've got to look after the goose and not kill the goose just to get the thing that we want. But in some contexts, it's the engine of the business, the engine of the workplace, the engine of the ministry, the engine, whatever it is that's producing. And so a lot of the not urgent is working at not just focusing on what's the eggs that are popping out, but focusing on how do I plump up the goose? how do I build the ministry structure stronger? How do I create greater depth to what we're doing? How do I work on my personal life so I'm more mature? How do I create a personal life so that I have enough recreation and relationship building so that I'm a whole person, not just, all those sort of things. But that takes time, energy, thought. So does relationship building, which is picked up in one of the questions. Relationship building actually takes spending time with people, wasting time with people, enjoying time with people. But it gets squeezed out if we're running from crisis to crisis, pressing problem, deadline to deadline. And so we actually have to plan in. And the older you get, the more responsibilities you have, the more kids and work and aging parents eventually. Relationship time gets squeezed and squeezed, and so you have to be more and more intentional about how we make it happen. Recognizing new opportunities. Massively important for growing ministry, for growing our ministry, is not just think, how do I keep doing what I'm doing, but where could we go? This could be so much bigger. This could be so much better. What are the possibilities? What are the opportunities? What's stopping those taking place? How could we achieve them? But that takes time and energy to actually sit down, plan, think, talk, all that sort of thing. It's not urgent. Exercise never feels urgent, does it? I'll get to that. But management of health is one of those things that needs the drip, 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 drip over many, many years rather than letting it roll. Same with recreation. Not just having fun, that's in part of it, but things that recreate you, things that actually energise you and... Now, the gospel causes us to sacrifice all sorts of things. So often we won't get the exercise and the recreation we wish we could have because there's more important things in life. And the results of living in this sort of way, shifting from the urgent to the not urgent, is the crises drop off, the pressing problems drop off, the deadline-driven projects, yes, there's still deadlines, but you plan them so far out that you actually just... stepping each deadline that comes is not a, if I don't get this done, it's all over. It's a, yeah, I set this deadline. It's fairly actually arbitrary because I set it and I know if I do it now, I'll get the next one done in the next month, I'll get the next, and then it'll be all done. You think about your uni planning, if you're at university, anyone at university? A couple? Yep, few. You plan the term, you look ahead, you work out what your assignments are, when you're going to do them, you get good lead times. When am I going to actually get the books from the library and do all the crazy photocopying? And when am I going to actually read the articles? And when am I actually... all that sort of stuff. Otherwise, you're just in there. Results gives you vision, gives you perspective. You achieve your priorities. It gives you discipline. It gives you control. Life is never fully in control. It gives you some measure of control. And it gives you a few crises. It's a much nicer place to live, but it's also a far more productive place to live. Because you achieve results and you build relationships. rather than just on the treadmill of doing what needs to be done. Now, while we're doing that, we're also often doing this. There's activities in our life that are actually not important activities, but they're urgent. And they often feel urgent because they're driven by other people. So they're interruptions, some phone calls, some emails, some reports, some meetings, some pressing matters, and popular activities. So things that everyone wants us to do for some reason. But if you actually sit down and thought about it and think, why? That doesn't actually achieve what we're trying to achieve. I know everyone wants me to do that, but I'm not going to do that anymore. Now you've got to negotiate how you relationally work through those issues, especially if people are your boss and they're interrupting you and sending you reports that you think, why am I writing this report? It actually doesn't report on the thing that we need to be reporting on. We've got to think through all that sort of stuff. But that results in really short-term focus, crisis management, goals and plans that seem to be worthless. But here's how you can tell if you're living in this world. You will feel victimized and out of control. You'll feel like a victim. You'll feel like people are putting on me demands and I can't get out of these demands. And I don't even feel these demands are worthwhile. That's often the feeling in the not important but urgent category. They keep barking at you, but in the long run, they're actually not very important things to do. And often it results in shallow or broken relationships because you're running from one thing to the other. You're so stressed and feel like you have no control over it that relationships become transaction relationships. And I think I've found this a danger for myself in church life, is you can start to see people as a means to an end. I come into this relationship with a transaction so that you can do the thing that I want you to do. Now go, because I don't have any more time for you. Next transaction. Rather than relationships as meaningful engagements where you actually concern and care about people and investing in them and they investing in you, being vulnerable, building trust, all those sort of things. Anyone resonate with that? No one owns up to that one. A couple of little nods there. And this one is an interesting one. This one's Facebook. This one's setting your Google document in a nicer framework and font. This one's, it's trivial. Just been busy for the sake of being busy. Some phone calls, some emails, absolute time wasters. And some pleasant activities. You do them because they're actually an enjoyable little part of your day. But if you really think about it, you shouldn't have done that. It was just an utter total waste of time. Now, we do need recreation, but I reckon Facebook fits into this category. Oh, I'm just flicking on, just having another little look around, just whatever it is that you're on, Instagram or whatever. You can see I'm old, can't you? Because actually, you could use those as tools to help you achieve your results in relationships. But if you live in this world too long, people fire you from your job, you're totally irresponsible, and you actually are always dependent upon others or other institutions. So in church world, you're not a great leader because you never do the things that need to be done. You do all these other trivial, frivolous, weird things that people wonder why you spend your time doing those sort of things. Now, to get into this category, at first you've got to starve these categories. You've got to steal as much as possible from these two. Just write that one straight off. Cross that one out of your life. This one is harder because it requires negotiation, relationships. How do we start to minimise that sort of stuff? And then over time, you start to withdraw from that category and pull into here so that you actually get in front of the game. Prevention, build production capacity, build relationships, recognise new opportunities, plan ahead. Important things like exercise, recreation, all those. That's the world we want to live in. Yes, but that requires a bit of plate spinning. So you know the plate spinning metaphor where, those juggler type people who spin multiple plates and they spin one and they move and spin another one. And we're all doing this often in our life, and actually often lots of plates are falling to the ground. We're spinning some things that we shouldn't be spinning. So let them fall, you get that. In here, you've got to keep spinning stuff. But you spin it so that you go over here and spin the big one. Spin it a little less. Spin it a little less and until this one gets built and that one gets reduced. And this gets starved and there'll be a couple of bits and pieces in there. Questions or comments on any of that? Thoughts? Yep. So yeah, prioritise and execute. That's good, yeah. And like I said here, some of these things, in the end, if you live a life where you didn't really plan and you didn't build production capacity and you weren't as effective as you wished and you were, but you hung on to Jesus, you know, you just had that one key thing and you did that, well, good on you. But we want to be as effective as we can for the kingdom, so I don't know if any of that's helpful. Some people write up mission statements. I can't go that far. But they actually get a personal mission statement for their life, what they want to achieve and where they want to go, and they adjust it. They get family ones. Sounds a bit American to me, but who we love. We love Americans. But,
you know. You gave another example.
Yeah, so it's all in relationship, gleaning each other's wisdom on things, but also working in partnership to come up with solutions to, so we're not just dropping stuff and being irresponsible, but we are. Yeah. Proactivity is one of those big in the literature. It's that sort of idea. It's I don't want to live life just happening to me all the time. I want to live in such a way that while I recognise the Lord's in control and I can't control everything, I want to be proactive as much as possible to take responsibility, which we talked a bit about, and make the changes that I can make. And even if I'm under someone in a work relationship or a ministry relationship or in a team, there's almost always something you can do. Negotiations, conversation, how can we fix this problem? How can we convincing someone that it's not the most effective use of time? Leading up as well as leading down. So good leaders learn to not just lead those under them, but actually fit in organisations where they have people leading them and can work well under them submissively, but lead up in the sense that we give good ideas, help to shape the leader's thinking, push them a little bit so that things move in healthy directions for us, but for the whole, because we're hopefully concerned about the whole and not just ourselves. So that's very helpful. Thank you. All right. Let me give you a few other thoughts and principles. Speaking of the 80-20 again, that's the 20 quadrant, generally. Pretty much everything in your 20% lives in that quadrant. So it's worth getting there. This is the planning quadrant, which brings me to another principle that I think is very simple but very helpful, is the principle that everything is created twice. So think about creation, God. God creates it once in his mind. Now, I don't see that anywhere in the Bible, but I extrapolate that from the fact that he predestines before the foundation of the world. And so his eternal decrees in his mind. So God creates in his mind before he creates in actuality. And now, don't draw too much from that. But we do the same. Before anything is created by us, we first created it in our mind. We thought of it, we conceived of it, and then we brought it about in reality. And so lots of the things that could be in our life don't be because we don't let them be in our mind first. So if you set aside time to actually think, you can then actually start to think of plans, think of possibilities, think of opportunities, and create what you want them to look like in your mind so that then you can actually create them in reality. Is that too weird? That's from Stephen Covey. I find that very helpful. And then you enter the process of reverse engineering. It's vision. Vision is just, I can see it. I can actually see. That's what a good leader does in a corporate setting. They actually paint a picture so that in your mind you can see what it's going to become. Oh, yeah, I want that. Now, how are we going to plan so that we can make that reality? All you're doing is it's on a personal scale. You see in your mind, you created a vision of where you want things to go and how they could possibly be. And then you start to set goals towards that, and then you start to plan about how you're going to implement those goals. So you reverse engineer the process in your life. But you've got to not just prioritize, you've got to execute. That's the other really crucial part of it. So you can have all these great dreams and plans for the future, and yet you never actually bring them into the present day, which is where I use lists. So there's lots of ways to do this, but in my on my Mac and my iPhone and my devices I just use reminders. It's not a very complex list system, but that's plenty for me. Now you can get ones that are really quite clever, where you've got your list and your list under your lists, and you can project plan your whole life, and that's just not me. So, and you might have better ways to do this, but I think simplicity for me is a massive rule or principle in life. Just simplicity, because the more complex things become, the less likely you're going to be able to pull them off. If it's simple, much more likely to happen. Same in church life. The longer church goes on, the more it seems to get bits and bigger and out of control, and who's responsible for it. And large churches who do it well simplify, like really clear, really, really simple. So for me, I have this week list, next week, and future, and they're my three lists. Now, I don't always just have three. Sometimes I break this week up into days, and sometimes I have another one. At the moment, I do after the holiday, because I'm gonna have a week off, and there's things that I don't want to think about, so I put them into that list, and it keeps me sane because I can't see them and I don't need to think about them. But they're there. They're trapped. I will get to those things. They will not be lost. That's the great thing about lists. But I use this not just as a, I won't forget to do things I need to do, which I need to not forget the things I need to do, but it actually becomes for me a planning tool. Now, there might be a better way to do this, but in the future, I have all my big goals. The goals, projects, projects. planning, thinking. Like sometimes I have in this list, think about blah. Like I actually need to set aside 3 hours to think about a particular problem in my life, but usually in church life, that actually, and as churches get bigger, they move from simple to complex to chaotic. So you've got to spend a fair bit of time thinking about why is this ecosystem working the way it's working, and what are the problems, and how do you, and again, that's in relationships and all sorts of things. But you actually need to set aside time to think. So don't underestimate thinking, but you won't do it unless you set aside time to. But I'll have a list of things I want to do, and then I will look through these things regularly, very regularly, usually every day. So I'll look at this list almost every day and see the things that are coming up in the future, and I will always have some of the things that flow out of this list in here. So this week I will have something that contributes towards that final goal. You know? Now there might be better ways to do that. You might have actually, I know someone who uses their calendar. So they sit down, they set the end goal or the end event, and they move back the month before I'm going to do this, a month before I'm going to do this, a month. And it might be a 2-year project, but they have set in their calendar dates for every single thing that they want to achieve right up to that point. I just don't do that. That's just not me. That's a little too tight for me. But hey. No, don't. They're all right. But I find the very discipline of looking through the future list at least weekly, but usually daily, actually reminds me of the big priorities that I'm trying to achieve, and worries me if I haven't set something in for this week or next week. And so I build in one of those things for this week or next week. Plus, there's other things that need to be done that are coming up, and I'm going to do this in church, MC, and I'm going to preach here, and I'm going to do that there. And there are a lot of these things, important and urgent, but I'm also building in these, which come from my future. For me, that works really well. May not work for you, but I think we need to make a way where we not just create in our mind the future we want, but then we bring the future into the present. How do I bring a step of the, a piece of the future into today? That's massively key. Questions, thoughts at that point? Just one sec. Before, I've got a friend who does the calendar one that I was telling you about. He sits at the beginning of a term and he will spend 4 hours calendarizing for a term. Now, that's that. But because he does that, that sounds terrible, doesn't it? 4 hours just calendarizing. But, oh, you like it. There you go. It takes all sorts.
You know?
I love the outcome it produces. I just, oh. Yeah. So, how long we got? We got 4 minutes. All right. Let's just pick some gold then. No, I go over. Energy management. It's important. We have rhythms to ourselves and our weeks, and so sometimes you're in a highly productive, deep thought period of the week. It's good to use it, thinking deeply, you know, match it up. There's times in our days where I think much better in the morning. So lock out the morning for thinking. Don't have too many meetings, Graham. Yeah? Set your meetings midday towards into the afternoon. Late afternoon, just do your admin because you're getting tired and you're not, you know. You may have different rhythms, though, to your life and your week, but it's working out how to use those rhythms well for you. And it's not always, you don't always have the flexibility. So sometimes you just push through and work with what you've got. But those things are helpful. Don't kill the goose that's laying the golden egg. Exercise well, sleep well, eat well, look after your posture. Slouching over a laptop, you won't feel at 25, you will feel it at 45. Can I tell you? It will have done terrible things to your back and your neck. And you can reverse, well, some of it you'll be able to reverse, some of it you won't, but it's very, very time consuming and painful. There's the word from an older man. Okay, here's one last piece of gold. The not to do list. Or the stop doing list. For me, I just think it's brilliant. I stole it from someone else. I just think it's absolutely brilliant. You actually have a list and you write down the list. Now, I just do it by actually building it into my future and have stopped doing such and such. So I don't want another list. But you actually build into your list things that you must stop doing. I'm getting an insight into your personality here. That's good. So if you work out the things that you've got to stop doing, you whack them on a list and you keep working on it until you can actually cross them off the list, that's really good. But I build them into this list. I think it's really helpful. Automation. I'll give you one more principle. Automation. There's some things in life that you can actually make automatic. But it takes a bit of thought to know how to do that. So you've got to sit in here. There's some things in ministry, some things in work, some things in that you just keep doing the same thing over and over again. You think if I just, and sometimes technology is the answer. Sometimes getting someone else to do it is the answer. Like you can bulk together a bunch of things, create a new ministry role, and that person takes that on and love doing it because they've got a, and you've got so. Sometimes it's a system, sometimes it's a structure, but you can actually automate things. Sometimes it's a, rather than emails keep coming to you. If you keep answering, it'll keep fueling all those emails coming to you, but you don't want to be rude that after a while you work out, actually, that email, every time it comes to me, I do this with it. Can I make it go like that somehow? Yes. Can I, and there's ways to actually automate things. So in the end, you find that 10% of what you used to do, you just don't have to do anymore. It happens elsewhere. More efficient, more effective. It's not just that you've passed the buck, there's a better, more efficient way to do it. It's a helpful thing. Automation. Batching of emails can be quite helpful. Yeah, do it all at once rather than spreading it out. Become the little bird pecking the little bit of seed. You know, next little bit of seed, next email, and we can't stop. Do you ever feel that? I've just got to answer my emails. I've just got to get my inbox down. I've just got to keep, you know, doing that. But and it fragments all our thinking. You're on a project. You're doing something. You're thinking about something really important. Oh, email. And it's really bad for our mind. And all the multitasking that we do, all the different apps we have open and all the different things, the different notifications that are coming through and all that sort of stuff, really bad for our deep thinking. And so we're becoming a society that's less able to read, less able to think deep and comprehend well and plan and all those sort of things because our mind is so fragmented and scattered. Which can be more productive in the short term, but it's generally not in the long term. So we need to become deep thinkers. And one of the things we do that is we need to interrupt interruption. So how do we do that? Our phones interrupt us all the time, like texting, emailing. So I think it is important to think of ways where we need to be free of those for certain periods of time while still being able to be contacted where we need to. So one of those things is batching emails into chunks of time. I do all my emails in this chunk and I clock off, I do other stuff and then I come back and I do all my emails in that chunk. Now, I don't practice what I preach in that often. I use my inbox as another to-do list and I try to keep it sparse because I try to keep all my to-do lists sparse and simple. But it's a reactive list usually. Not always, but usually your inbox is a reactive list rather than a proactive list. So if you don't want to live reactively, but you actually want to live proactively, we've got to work out ways to manage that somehow. That'll do, eh? I'll pray, shall I? Thank you, Lord, so much that you've built this world in such a way that it's ordered and it works. And while sin has cracked and corrupted it and there are all sorts of problems and things don't work the way that we wish they would all the time, there's still enough order that we can work out principles from life. So please help us to be principle-driven people, but to see all those principles through the lens of your scriptures. So we work out what's wise, what's foolish, and what's helpful but with change and nuance in it, please, Lord. Please give us that deep theological mind. And please make us people who are more and more effective in the use of our time. And we ask that you'd help us to achieve results for your kingdom and build the relationships that honour you. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks, everyone.